Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about her.
Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 230. I'm just sweating thinking of that. Of Her, the podcast, where you'll hear the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and today, her sabotage. Self-sabotage. What's that about? We're going to find out, and we've got a terrific show with a superb expert coming up. And just know, before we begin, that this whole episode is made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Vitamins, the delicious once-a-day gummies that contain all of the essential vitamins, minerals, and omega oils customized just for women. To learn more, hop on over to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And here's your first official reminder to click on iTunes after this episode to rate and review the show, because I'm sitting here just twiddling my thumbs waiting to hear from you. That's right. I love your feedback. I do. It's the truth. All right, it's time for her. All right, sabotage. Raise your hands if you're out there somewhere in her podcast land and you say, you know, no matter how I try to do something better, you know, make better relationships, lose the loser boyfriends, take all of those wonderful New Year's resolutions and make them work for myself, and then they don't. Am I sabotaging myself? No one is better at explaining this whole lovely phenomenon in our life than Dr. Judy Ho, who's a licensed and board-certified clinical and forensic psychologist and co-host of CBS's show Face the Truth with Vivica Fox. Dr. Judy is also author of the book Stop Self-Sabotage, Six Steps to Unlock Your True Motivation, Harness Your Willpower, and Get Out of Your Own Way. Dr. Ho, welcome to the Her Podcast.
Dr. Pam, thank you so much for having me back. I'm so excited to speak with you again.
All right, Dr. Judy, help us. What is this whole thing? What are these factors that cause your self-sabotage behaviors? What's going on?
Oh, my goodness. Well, first of all, when people say that they're self-sabotaging, they oftentimes start blaming themselves. They say, oh, my gosh, what's wrong with me? Why don't I have better willpower? When I say I want something, how come I stop short at getting it? And the first thing that I want to tell everyone is just that self-sabotage is universal. In many ways, it's a biological phenomenon, an evolutionary mechanism that got turned on its head despite our best intentions, because all human beings do have a drive to avoid threat. It's the only way that we can survive in this world as individuals and as a species. But we also have to balance that with attaining rewards so that we keep moving forward as individuals and as a species too. And usually when those two drives are in balance, everything's going swimmingly. But unfortunately, because of a variety of factors, sometimes we start prioritizing avoiding threats more so than thinking about all of those rewards and things that we want and we can obtain. And so when that happens, that's when the self-sabotage switch gets triggered.
Oh boy, self-sabotage, shooting yourself in your very feminine foot, right through those heels, you know, just kill those blonics, you know what I'm saying? So right from your book, 12 quick self-sabotaging busters you can use in under, I love this part, 5 minutes, under 5 minutes to stop self-sabotage in its roots.
Yes. And, you know, it's all about making sure that you are aware of your thoughts. That's really the first step for stopping self-sabotage, is becoming aware of your thoughts and the patterns that they have in your head. Because sometimes we don't realize that every negative emotion and every action that we regret doing, every self-sabotage action, it is preceded by a thought. the thought occurs and then we react to the thought either with a feeling or with an action. So once you notice the types of thoughts that tend to get in your way, and you know, everybody has different ones. Sometimes people are very black and white in their thinking. They make one mistake in their goal pursuit and they think, oh, I should just throw everything out. I just screwed everything up. Or they are catastrophizers where their thoughts are always about everything and everything that will go wrong in the future. Or maybe their thoughts are filled with rules and shoulds and all the things that they're supposed to do. So whenever they fall off of their own little internal script of what's right and what's wrong, all of a sudden they're a horrible individual. And then the self-sabotage occurs because they start thinking, well, there's no use anyway because I'm helpless. And so in order to use any of these quick self-sabotage busters, the first thing is always to start noticing your thoughts. Start getting used to asking yourself this question: what was my thought just before this feeling or just before this action? And you'll start to see that there is a pattern to many of our thoughts.
You know, I think a lot of people simply aren't introspective enough. You know, they're just, you know, especially women, once we get our little anxiety going, then our brain goes like a little, you know, treadmill up there on high. And what we're doing is we're not really stopping. How do you stop all of that, you know, what they've called monkey brain? You're running all over the place and you just can't seem to be able to get to a place where you can actually look, observe your behavior so that you will stop any self-sabotage early in its tracks. How do you do that?
You are so right, Dr. Peak. There is sort of that monkey brain, that mental chatter that we can't stop. And it's no wonder because the average person has about 50,000 thoughts in a day. So if you're not the average person and you tend to think even faster, or you know that you're kind of somebody who kind of ruminates and has all types of ideas all the time, well, you might have even more than that. And so I think part of the issue is we have so many thoughts in a day, but clearly we're not processing it all. There's no way that our brain is absorbing it all on a conscious level because that's just too many thoughts. But sometimes we really give one or two thoughts way more attention than it deserves. Instead of just recognizing that a thought is just a mental event and you don't have to hold on to anything, we start becoming really identified with our thoughts. You know, we have a thought and we think, oh my gosh, it's already happening or it's going to happen. And it's not true. And so a lot of it is really just recognizing and labeling a thought as what it is, which is just a mental event. So oftentimes when somebody thinks a really negative thought about themselves or their inability to achieve something, like for example, if they have a thought, I'm never going to achieve this goal, I tell them a very simple technique to use right away that can help, which is a technique called labeling. And all you do is add this little clause in front of that negative thought. And the little clause is, I'm having the thought that. When you add that to the first sentence, and it's, I'm having the thought that I'm never going to reach my goals, all of a sudden, the wind gets taken out of the sails a little bit. It doesn't mean that this horrible negative idea is going to happen. It's just, it means that you had a thought about it. And then it has less impact on how you will carry out the rest of your day and how you will feel.
Oh, Dr. Ho, Dr. Judy, you know what you're doing? You're doing a very Zen thing. And that is, a lot of Buddhism is all about separating yourself from the craziness, right? And I remember one technique that was taught me once was, if you're having funky thoughts, right, park them on a cloud above you and simply watch that cloud kind of buzz by. And just say to yourself, it's a thought. That's all it was. It was a thought, good, bad, or otherwise, it's a thought. And then once you can kind of separate yourself from that, very much like what you're talking about, then it totally, absolutely takes the wind out of the sails. And it really robs that thought of its power over you, right?
Absolutely. It's one and the same type of philosophy, which is that you separate yourself from your thought processes, that your thoughts are not who you are, that you're not identified with your thoughts. And that technique that you just described is one that I use all the time with my clients as well. We talk about it as thoughts on a cloud, or sometimes we do thoughts on leaves. You know, we think, imagining that leaves are going down a stream, and you can imprint each of the thoughts that come into your head on one of those leave, and then it's just going to get carried downstream instead of you trying to grapple with it and hold on to it. And the idea of imprinting your thought on something external to you in the real world is a very powerful technique, because that creates that separation between your thoughts and you. When the thoughts are bubbling around in our head, it does feel like it is us. So if you have a negative thought like, I'm a loser, I'm no good, it feels like it is part of you. But if you can take that thought outside of your body and put it to something in the external world, not only is it separate of you, it is also now all of a sudden something that has a physical boundary. When something is in your head, it feels amorphous. It feels like it's going to go on forever. But every single item in the physical world, even something as big as the Grand Canyon, has a beginning and an end. And all of a sudden, it feels less overwhelming.
Well, okay, now you have another tool that you use called a vision board. Tell us about that.
Absolutely. And my board is not the traditional vision board, but rather what I call a blueprint for change. And the difference between that and most traditional vision boards, because we all know visualization is a powerful technique, the problem with traditional vision boards is you put on all your hopes and dreams, and then you don't have the prescription, the steps, the recipe on how you're going to achieve those dreams. And so my blueprint for change is different, because all of the steps that you need to stop self-sabotage in its tracks are right there on that particular visual piece. And when you see that, it's like the blueprint of a house, that anybody can come to see this blueprint and say, okay, this is where the bathroom goes, and this is how you'd build out the bathroom. This is the dimensions. You would actually see all the steps right there, so you don't have to then take that extra mental step of thinking about how you're actually going to get to those goals in the first place. All of those small and intermediary steps are right there for you on that board.
You know, and again, that takes a lot of self-knowledge. You got to know,
yes,
you know, what's even possible. You can't, you know, build a vision board from a bunch of really unrealistic expectations. How do you draw someone to a more realistic expectation? Because you know how it goes. When people want to change a habit, it's like, okay, I'm dropping those 25 pounds in a month, right?
Right.
I'm going to, you know, suddenly turn my skin around in a week, and my hair will be glossy in no time, and I'm going to be able to, you know, do that first 5K in 2 months. So how do you, I know, seriously, both of us, we've been there. How do you draw it in, and just with self-compassion, how do you get someone to kind of like, hey, girlfriend, get your Manolos right back down on the ground again?
This is a really good question. And I think many people will relate to this. And for me, I try to reorient people in terms of their goal setting to their values first. You know, we talk about goals so much. People have bucket lists. People have all types of goals in all areas of life. And yet sometimes when they achieve those goals, they'll say, man, I kind of felt empty inside when I got there. Like, what's next? Or they have a hard time getting to the goal in the first place. Their motivation starts to decline. Their willpower starts to fall off. And then they blame themselves. There's something wrong with me internally. No, there isn't. What might have been the problem is that your goals were not tethered to a value. Now, values are different from goals because they can't be checked off the list. Values are different because they stand for something that you want to be remembered by, something that you want your life to embody. How do you want people to remember you when you leave this world? And those things are continuous. They're not checked off. Values are things like honesty, integrity, a sense of adventure, community, wanting to have better relationships with family, friends, having a sense of ambition, having a sense of knowledge. So those types of things don't tend to be checked off. If a knowledge is your value, you're not going to say, I've acquired enough knowledge, check, I don't care about value of knowledge anymore. You're going to always be doing something to further that particular value. So my first go-to for people is to ask them to define their top five values in their life at this current time, and then to recreate the goals with those values in mind. And every goal that you should be setting should be anchored to at least one of your top values if you really want to have a chance of achieving it, and if you want that goal to be fulfilling to you when you get there.
Gotcha. Now, you brought up the issue of willpower, and I'm really curious about something. You said you know, One of your points in your book is unlock your willpower to stop this vicious cycle of self-sabotage in its tracks. Now, the issue of willpower is kind of interesting. People have written about it, and what they've really said was that, you know, in many respects, willpower is kind of like a budget. You get a daily budget of willpower because, quite frankly, it takes effort and work on your part to be able to kind of find that willpower, dig into it, and work it. And I'm wondering if one of the reasons why people self-sabotage is because by the time, you know, they've come home from work and we're tired, and you know, and now you've got to make a meal and make a healthy one, and maybe maybe you were supposed to hit the gym before you, you know, got home, or I don't know, something happened there. Take that little walk, walk your dog, and this and that. But, you know, you're tired. Maybe your willpower, you know, has just been used up for the day, and now you're open and vulnerable, and then you're going to be caving to the self-sabotage. I don't know. What do you see that domino effect?
Absolutely. You know, willpower is a depreciable resource. It is not an infinite resource. And you have to start to treat willpower in many ways. Like you were saying, you know, one good analogy is a budget. Another analogy I use a lot with my clients and my colleagues is that willpower is something that you that does kind of go away with time as more that you use it. So it's like when you're training parts of your body, eventually you'll fatigue. You can't run 50 miles without taking a break. You gotta, you know, you kind of be really, really high energy for that first 5 miles, then you're going to start to dwindle and dwindle. And so, yes, you know, in general, willpower depreciates over the day, but you can start with a bigger budget, if you will, every day, if you tether your goals to your values. So let's say your usual willpower is a 10. If you actually make goals that are tethered to your values, then you're more likely to be motivated to keep pushing forward when the going gets tough. And so then maybe you can expand your budget to a 15 or a 20 so that you have more to draw from throughout the day. But yes, the other part of this is absolutely to not leave those difficult decisions to a time where your willpower is already dwindling. And if you know that that's when your willpower starts to dwindle, like when you get home and you're tired and now you have to make a healthy meal and then you just say, forget it. You go into the pantry, you eat those snacks. The whole idea behind how to work with this is then to make sure that you have a plan ahead of time. So you don't wait until you get home that night to make those decisions. I have a technique that I call the if-thens. You look at all of the triggers that might happen when you get to that point where your willpower is dwindled and you create a alternative that you can implement on the spot without having to think about it. So if you know already that you are likely to reach for those unhealthy snacks at night, then you got to make an if-then plan. If I get home and I'm too exhausted to cook and I'm getting ready to go into that pantry and get those unhealthy snacks, then I will go to the freezer and defrost one of those healthy meals I made on Sunday and I froze because I know that there's going to be a couple of days this week that I'm just not going to be able to get to cooking. You know, have those plans set up ahead of time so that when you get to those very difficult situations, you're going to know what to do without having to invoke your willpower at that point to think about it further.
Now, you brought up the issue of triggers. You know,
yes.
It's an interesting point because you ask yourself, when's the best time to really identify a trigger? Is it in the moment when all hell's breaking out and you're about ready to cave to the crave and screw this up badly? Or is it when you have a more calm, introspective moment where you can kind of look back and go, A, ergo B, you know, my mother-in-law walked in and I wanted to become one with Ben and Jerry's. What is it both of those things? I mean, what works best to be able to identify triggers?
Really great question. And I would say, yes, you kind of utilize it at both of those times, but they're for different purposes. So you do it at a time when you're calm, maybe at a time when you've set aside in the morning before anything triggering happens, to think a little bit ahead and think about what are my pitfalls? What are the places where I'm going to get triggered most? And then come up with an if-then plan for those triggers. So if X trigger happens, then I will do Y plan. Do that at a time when you are calm and you can think about these things in advance. But when the trigger already starts happening, then it is still important for you to think about, wait, how did I just get triggered right now? And then to apply something that is much more in the here and now to at least bring your frustration level down so that you can then implement something that would be logical, that would be executable in your logical mind. Because when we're triggered, it's much more easily emotionally reactive in terms of what we do next. We don't necessarily, when we get triggered, are operating at that time in our logical brain. So you have to bring it back in the first place. And so a lot of those techniques in the moment has to do with a frustration tolerance technique first. And these are really simple things that don't take a lot of thinking, like just reminding yourself that taking 10 deep breaths. I know that that sounds like it's so easy, but it actually does reset your biology. It resets your physiology. It tells your body and mind, hey, things are cool. We can switch back into the parasympathetic nervous system. We don't have to be in fight or flight right now. And that can happen in under a minute. And once your brain and your body has reset, then you can say, all right, what's the most logical thing to do that wouldn't be self-sabotaging in this moment?
I love it. I love it. I love it. Now, you're the author of a book called Stop Self-Sabotage, 6 Steps to Unlock Your True Motivation, Harness Your Willpower, and Get Out of Your Own Way. Quickly, what are the 6 steps? Just say them.
All right. So the 6 steps, the very first step is to identify your thought triggers. These are those thought traps that happen, all of our thoughts, those 50,000 thoughts a day. What are the ones that continue to fuel our self-sabotage? Really being able to understand those patterns and understanding exactly how you get triggered to do these self-sabotaging actions. Step 2 is to deactivate these triggers and to reset your thermostat. As I mentioned before, once you feel triggered, you want to be reactive. You want to do things that don't make sense. So how do we deactivate those triggers in the first place? And then if we can't deactivate in the first place and they're happening, how do we reset the thermostat in the moment so you can get back on track? Step 3 is all about releasing the rut, rinse and repeat the basic ABCs. This is where we really get into behavioral management. What are the things that drive your behavior? And what are the things that keep reinforcing those bad behaviors despite your best intentions? So we take a really good look at that pathway, because then step 4 is to replace those bad behaviors. So step 4 is replacement, not repetition. Let's stop doing the same thing over and over again. Let's get off that hamster wheel and replace those unhealthy behaviors with some healthy ones. Step 5 is where we get into that values work, all of the things that we've been talking about. Goals are important, but values are even more important. So a value a day keeps self-sabotage away. And I have a great exercise where I take people through a values card sort so that they can identify their top 5 values and live their life accordingly. And finally, step 6 is the blueprint for change. That's my visualization tool where you can then recap all the tools that we've discussed in my book and in my program and put it all in one place so that whenever self-sabotage is likely to occur, you take out your blueprint. And just like the blueprint of a house, you know what to do next and to eradicate self-sabotage once and for all.
Yay! So everyone out there in her podcast land, we've been listening to our wonderful Dr. Judy Ho, who's a licensed and board certified clinical and forensic psychologist and co-host of CBS's show Face the Truth with Vivica Fox. And her book, Stop Self-Sabotage, 6 Steps, you just heard them, to unlock your true motivation, harness your willpower, and get out of your own way. Dr. Judy, thank you so much for being on the Her Podcast.
And thank you so much for interviewing me and having me back. I hope you have a wonderful rest of the week. And thank you again for talking to me about stopping self-sabotage.
Yay. And everyone out there now, take a moment, run on over to iTunes, rate and review this show, because we want to hear from you. Why? Well, because we love to hear from you. I'm Dr. Pam Peek, host of the Her Podcast. Follow me on Facebook at Dr. Pam Peek or Twitter at Pam Peek MD. And remember to catch every single episode of the Her Podcast on iTunes or Radio MD. Thanks for listening today, and stay well.